Today on the 21st Show, a growing number of Illinois students are missing a significant number of school days. In fact, one in four meets the legal definition of chronic absenteeism. Like most societal problems, the causes are varied, from COVID fear to trouble at home to social anxiety.
As tears roll down her cheeks, she says, I want to study, but not here.
Do you not feel safe? Are you stressed?
Because I don't have friends. I don't have any people.
We're talking with educators from across Illinois about the problem and what's being done to try to turn it around. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WNIJ in DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The weather is getting warmer, but school is still in session across Illinois, and it will be for a little while longer. But what happens when students are missing so much of that time in the classroom?
Chronic absenteeism is a problem for school districts and students across the country. While some states have seen modest gains, the situation has grown significantly worse since the pandemic.
There's an old joke that the best ability is availability. For kids to learn, they have to be in the building.
It's frustrating for the kids because they walk in and they know that they've missed something important.
Chronic absenteeism is nothing new, but as with so many other things in the world of education, the pandemic compounded the problem, not to mention some of the issues students and their families face that created the problem in the first place. According to the Illinois State Board of Education, in the previous school year, 28% of students across the state were considered chronically absent. That's up significantly from the years before the pandemic, when that figure was at 17%. And these absences have effects. The U.S. Department of Education has said it's likely among the reasons for a drop in test scores on topics like reading and math. And that can have drastic consequences. It's also worth noting that all of this has been happening since before the Trump administration started its efforts to dismantle the federal education department. So today, for the hour, we're going to hear about what's happening in Illinois schools, try to learn why it's happening, and talk about what is being done to change it. We first talked about this back in September last year. Regional Office of Education 51, which oversees schools in Sangamon and Menard counties, has a program it calls Project Impact. It works with students and their families to identify and overcome the barriers that keep kids from attending school. The supervisor of Project Impact is Felicia Stapleton, and she joined us for this conversation. We also wanted to hear from some of the districts being affected by this. Peoria Public Schools serves around 13,000 students, and Sharon DeMoulin-Carat has been its superintendent since 2015. Finally, East St. Louis School District 189 has around 4,600 students, and we were joined by its chief of schools, Keisha Garrett. Again, we originally spoke about this on the program back in September. Because our show's on tape, we're not taking calls live, but you can always let us know what you thought by sending us an email. Our address is talk@21stshow.org. All right, Felicia Stapleton with the Sangamon Menard ROE. I want to begin with you. We've spent the last couple of minutes of sort of outlined the broad strokes here, but how do you actually define chronic absenteeism?
So there's actually, it's defined by the state, the law, but when we look at it in the district that we work in, we look at those students who are currently missing 9 or more unexcused absences. Now we will look at those that are excused as well, because sometimes it's an issue that we may miss because of them being excused, but we do put a heavy focus on those unexcused as well.
So is this what we used to call truancy, are there shades of difference here?
It is what we consider truancy, yes.
Okay.
But when you look at chronic absenteeism, you're also looking at excused, unexcused. It could be a suspension. It could be a student who is within a building but placed in a different classroom, an in-school suspension. All of those are counted into the chronic absenteeism number.
Okay, I think, yeah, and you said in statutes is what, missing 10% of the school year or something like that? So, Okay. So, Dr. Karat, I'd like to bring you into the conversation now from Peoria. What contributes to making absenteeism worse for one area versus another?
I would say the challenges, for sure. You know, we have 27 school buildings, and they're not all equal. Some schools and families are, you know, they have a tougher time, and so you might have, you know, individuals, for example, having ACEs that are very, very, very severe, and I'm talking about adverse childhood experiences. It could be a number of things. I mean, we, you know, you have a high foster, you know, some kids are in foster homes, and just, you know, family situations or employment situation. I actually had a principal's meeting this morning, and our county, city and county came up with the racial justice report, and there's a lot of disparities, whether it's employment disparities, vehicle disparities. I mean, just so many challenges and issues. And for us, you know, it's all about meeting them where they are and problem solving. And we'll get to that. We do a lot of home visits. But yeah, not all families are equal. Not all areas are equal. And we're in an urban district with 76% low income and about 80% minority students, including Hispanic and Blacks, and just a lot of, you know, the social ills that some of us have to contend with. And so that's the work, though.
Yeah, there's a lot to sort of unpack in that answer, and we're going to come back to a number of those points as we continue in our conversation. Keisha Garrett from East St. Louis, let me bring you in now, because there are a lot of reasons that an individual student can be chronically absent. And let's start with what the students might be dealing with in the school environment. What sort of things do you see there?
So in the school environment, some of the things that we notice are, it's pretty minute right now, but definitely some bullying issues. There are students who just don't take well to, you know, the school environment. For some reason, they want to avoid school. Another big thing that we've seen since coming out of the school closure period after the pandemic is really a depreciation of in-person learning. Students thinking they can make work up online, do things outside of the in-person. And so should any other factors inside or outside of school affect students, they do see that depreciation of the in-person learning and will decide to do that makeup work online. And we see that a lot with older students, more of our 6 through 12 group that deal with, of course, the change in their development, becoming young adults and teens, and they're dealing with identity and other social, emotional, and ACEs, as Dr. Corrett talked about, other trauma and things like that. And it carries over into their school day and outside of such. But definitely, students really seeing more of the value in just completing work and not necessarily value in attending school in person is one of those really big agitating factors right now for the high rates of chronic absenteeism.
Yeah. ACEs, just for our listeners to make that, draw that connection, that's adverse childhood experiences, or commonly often referred to as trauma, which you had both talked about. You know, this reminds me of we got a text message from a listener, Joe in Carbondale, Illinois, who said, I teach GED classes in far southern Illinois, and many of my students are with me because they chose not to return to school after the pandemic. I never ask why a student has left school, Joe says, but a reason they frequently mention is anxiety. Most of the situations that they describe giving them anxiety are what I consider to be normal social situations. Some students have told me later on that their anxiety lessened after they had more experience in the broader community, like getting a driver's license and being able to get out of the house, which had become a safe haven for them. Joe, thank you for that message. Keisha, does that resonate with what you hear from people?
That does. One of the other big factors is I hear that I think about a lot of our students in 10th grade deciding to join the workforce really earlier than, you know, most of us did. As soon as they're able to legally get a permit, they're deciding to work to take care of themselves. And that is agitated from within the school environment and outside. Students do want to dress nice when they come to school and do want things, of course, to appeal to their peers, but they also take on that responsibility of helping to take care of their family and providing for family and younger siblings. And so we do see a lot of work-related attendance issues, students being late because they work late in the evening or because they are tired, they don't come to school.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just joining us, this is the 21st show. We're spending our entire program today on the problem of chronic absenteeism in schools. It's a problem here in Illinois and really across the country. And we're talking about the effect that can have on students' education. This is partly truancy, but it's not just that, where students turn up for no reason. This is also what happens when a student misses a lot of school, even with valid reasons. And we are talking about this with Keisha Garrett, who is chief of schools for East St. Louis District 189, Sharon Karat, who is superintendent of Peoria Public Schools, and Felicia Stapleton, who supervises the Project Impact Program run by the Regional Office of Education 51 in Central Illinois. And Felicia, let me ask you, so we talked a little bit about in-school pressures there. What are some of the things that contribute to chronic absences outside the schools? Things that are maybe even beyond a student's control?
So some of the pieces that we have witnessed, or I would say myself, as long as I've been dealing with attendance, it can be anywhere from working, I think, which was mentioned earlier. Some of the older kids, you know, they're getting jobs earlier because they're needing to make money. Some are needing to help support their families. And so they take on that responsibility because they see that it's more important to put a roof over their family's head as opposed to going to school and getting that education. They may opt to go and do it later, seeking something alternative such as a GED. Those are some barriers that we, you know, battle with and deal with. On some of the lower grade levels, which the program that we currently have is elementary and middle. And I'm also familiar with high school because I came from one of the high schools. The outside pieces can be factors such as them facing homelessness, getting that assistance with helping utilities. A lot of what we have had to deal with now is going into the homes and eliminating barriers that are in the home before we can even get the student in the door. We have to assist the families and help them overcome some of those issues that they might be dealing with. And then we can, you know, push services into the child and getting them in the building after we assist the family.
I want to read another message we got from a listener. This is from Ann in Urbana, who texted, "People got used to not going to school, to work, to church, out to shop with the pandemic. Not sure how and if we will recover." Keisha, this was a problem even before the pandemic, though. But talk about the ways that the pandemic made this problem worse, especially, or even now, I guess, after we're beyond the days of e-learning.
I do think that the pandemic made us look at health even more as a priority. We asked staff and students if they felt ill to make sure they stayed home. And so now, you know, common cold, COVID, or anything, those things, of course, are on the rise. If someone believes they're sick, they will definitely take that time. Whereas in the past, in older workforces, sometimes we pressed to come on in and things like that. So we definitely had the priority of the person being seen, and definitely health being number one. So that's one of the big issues that it's not really an issue, but definitely could agitate that unexcused absence, because we do see that a lot with our early learners, the first through fifth grade students, those early health concerns, asthma, food allergies. And I know family transitions and homelessness was mentioned, but definitely that health being a priority, even in cases where it may not have been prioritized previously, headaches or fevers or things like that. Those are not now reasons that, you know, we don't play around with. People do stay away from the school environment or environment when they feel ill.
I was going to ask if that was still the recommendation, because one of our producers found this nonprofit group called Attendance Works that kind of framed it as a misconception that students should stay home for any symptom of illness. Is that still the guideline where you are, or how do you encourage families to think about that?
That's not still the guideline, but it kind of goes back to Ms. Stapleton's, I think she discussed anxiety and fear. I do think that that's one of the big agitating factors that, you know, folks think that if I feel ill, I may get others ill, or I should stay home, or I should definitely test before going into work or into school. And so you do have that kind of unofficial family guidance that supersedes even, you know, the CDC's guidance. So while currently our local health department and the guidance doesn't so much speak to, you know, symptoms of the common cold and other things, if families feel like a child is ill, they will opt to keep them home and they will call the school and make a note of that. But again, that's an excused absence, but it is not preclude them from the chronic absentee rate.
All right, we're going to need to take a break. When we come back, we'll have more from our September conversation on chronic absenteeism. This is a problem not just in Illinois, but really across the country. My guests for this were Felicia Stapleton, supervisor of a program called Project Impact, which is run by the Regional Office of Education 51 for Sangamon and Menard Counties, Keisha Garrett, who's chief of schools in East St. Louis School District 189, and finally, superintendent of the Peoria Public Schools, Sharon DeMoulin-Carat. We love hearing what you think about our program. If you have thoughts or ideas for future conversations we should consider, send us an email. Our address is talk@21stshow.org. I also want to mention our program is now available on YouTube. So in addition to being able to find us on our website, 21stshow.org, and all the places you normally get your podcasts, you can now find us on YouTube by searching for Illinois Public Media. All right, more to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're spending our entire program today on the problem of chronic absenteeism in schools here in Illinois and across the country. And we're also talking about the effect that has on students' education. Now, this is not only truancy, where students don't show up for no reason, but it also accounts for students who miss a lot of school even with valid reasons. We talked about this in September of last year with Sharon DeMoulin-Carat, superintendent of Peoria Public Schools, Keisha Garrett, chief of schools for East St. Louis School District 189, and Felicia Stapleton, who supervises the Project Impact program run by the Regional Office of Education 51 in Central Illinois. Again, our conversation's on tape, so no calls live today, but let us know what you think. Our email address is talk@21stshow.org. Dr. Carat, I want to ask you to talk about balancing the needs. Before the break, we were talking about the pandemic, but talk about balancing the needs between the health of students and staff and the broader community against the needs for students to actually be there in the classroom to get the best learning outcomes.
Yeah, so it's very, very important. I remember when I started as superintendent in 2015, I came and we were in the middle of putting our strategic plan together, and a big focus was on discipline. And we had a conversation because we wanted one of the pillars to be about behavior, student behavior and discipline. And when we really, you know, peeled the onions and dug in deeper, it came out to be more supports around social emotional and embedding that, teaching children more about self-regulation and getting along with each other, problem solving, those sorts of things. Additionally, our wraparound center came from that as well, which is a one-stop shop where we provide counseling and food pantry and financial supports. Even probation is out there. We have justice advocates providing supports for families and students. So that's very important. We had gotten a community grant also from Illinois State Board of Education to also help our teachers. Even during COVID, we had four goals. We focused on not only continuing education, communicating with families, but also the wellness of all of our students and families and students, teachers as well, so, and staff overall. So it's very, very important. Our strategic plan, we have five strategies or five pillars, and embedding SEL is a huge, huge piece. So that is very, very important because it's all about educating the whole child. If they're not, you know, if they're not emotionally, physically ready, then we're not able to reach them academically. And so that's a huge piece for us in Peoria Public Schools.
Kim is calling from Springfield on line one. Kim, thank you for calling in.
Thank you for having me. So my question is, how are we making families feel safe coming back into our building? We can only blame COVID for so long, and I feel like we're done blaming COVID, but there's so many other issues that schools are facing besides illness. We're looking at mental health issues. That's a type of illness. We're looking at mental health. We're looking at bullying. We're looking at students that really don't like their teachers, and then what happens is they're going home and telling their families these things, and so then the family becomes leery of school. How can we help families to feel comfortable and safe coming back into our buildings?
Kim, excellent question. Thank you so much for calling in with that. Dr. Karat, I'll begin with you.
Yeah, I'll take that one. And that's a very, very good question. And what we have done is we have provided, since I've been superintendent, 15 alternative options. And so I think it was already mentioned, we have that online option in case kids, you know, want that option. We have weekend schools, we have evening school, we have online school in the building, out of the building. So, and I would say that's really, really helped us. We even struggled with our younger kids who needed some extra support, primary levels. I remember like my first week on the job, having a conversation with my union, and they're like, hey, this, you know, this is just not working. And we came up with a Rise Academy for those children, and they're having so much success with a lot of emotional, social emotional strategies and tips, and they're learning and they're doing very well in that environment. So yeah, it's working. And as a result, we, you know, our enrollment, I think, because, you know, we're over 13,000 children, because parents, there's something for everybody. There's an option for everybody, and it doesn't have to be the traditional option.
Keisha Garrett, how does that look in East St. Louis schools?
Yes, I wanted to ditto a lot of things Dr. Karat said. We definitely, in our strategic plan too, focus area three on having a safe and healthy school environment. And that does involve all the things you asked in your question. Of course, the physical safety, but that social emotional safety for students. Our district has a family and community engagement center. It's called the FACE Center. It is a centralized center for families and community to visit daily to have needs met. It's just kind of a centralized point to get resources and such for families. Within that building, we have the Family Relief and Response Department, who, of course, they were initially engaged during the time that we had the subsequent funding from the federal government for post-pandemic planning. But we have maintained that as a district. It's so important and key to have the folks there to deal with our families as well as in the schools. We have increased as well our social emotional support to students and our family engagement support to our parents. We have partnerships with community partners to also reach out to our families, because that feeling safe is, of course, that physical safety, but also that social emotional and mental health safety for families. Our teachers and staff have been trained in areas of restorative justice, emphatic instruction, so that they understand the needs of our families and communities. In addition to that, our district engages in 24-hour wraparound. If our students' families need district support outside of school hours, we do that in conjunction with our local police departments, and we support our families around the clock, but it is a individual family need support service. Just as mentioned before, we do make sure that we reach out to those families. But that is the beginning of supporting our families to feel safe, making sure that we meet their needs where they are need to be met.
I'm intrigued by that. You mentioned, I think you called it a FACE center. What sort of needs, I mean, are we talking hunger, housing, transportation, healthcare? What are you talking about when you say families, if they have needs met, this is daily interface that can happen?
Sure. It can be any of our registered homeless families, but also our families that are not registered have needs, like you mentioned before, any needs that are preventing students from coming to school, uniform, community partnerships that help families with needs such as needs with bills at home or any of those kinds of needs outside of school. We connect them to our partners and make sure we support that connection to any resources. Anything from enrollment of the family, health services, making sure they can see our school-based clinics or any other area health. So a range of needs. We also at some times have legal support there too for parents. You know, everything from expungement to will development. We do provide that on site with partnerships. So we do that at the campuses, but it is centralized in one district building for families to start that process.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking about the problem of chronic absenteeism in schools today. It's something that's increased significantly since the pandemic. Something like 1 in 4 students in Illinois meets the legal definition of being chronically absentee. And it was fewer than 1 in 5, 1 in 6 maybe, before the pandemic. So that number has increased significantly in the last few years. We're talking about this with Keisha Garrett, who's chief of schools in East St. Louis District 189, Dr. Sharon Desmoulins-Carat, who is superintendent of Peoria Public Schools, and Felicia Stapleton, who supervises a program called Project Impact, run by the Regional Office of Education 51 for Sangamon and Menard counties in central Illinois. Before we move on to some of the solutions that are being tried, I do want to ask about what effect this has on students and their families, what effect this has on education. And so I'll ask Felicia Stapleton with the Sangamon Menard Regional Office of Education, what do you hear from students and their families about how this is affecting their education?
I think it really just depends on the family. So we have some families that, you know, I'm not going to say families don't think that education is important, because I know that they do. However, when it's a choice of having a roof over my head and taking care of those responsibilities versus going into a school building daily, they're going to pick, we need to have a roof over our head and put food in our mouth. And it's not to say that they don't value education, because they do, but at that point in time, it's not as at the top of their list. It is super important. Families know the importance of education. They know the importance of students being at school daily and being there on time in those seats when the bell rings. But some families feel like, okay, they're late, but at least I have them here. And so I think we as educators have to be mindful of that. We have to remind ourselves all the time of meeting our families where they are, because they are right. At least they got them there. You know, it may not be when we want them there, but they are there. And so just meeting the families where they are, I think, is one of the big steps that we can continue to take and moving forward, because we can't judge families. We don't know what they have going on. We try, but we don't always know everything that they have going on in their lives, because they're only going to open up and share so much with us.
Dr. Carat, what about from your perspective, short-term and long-term? How do you see chronic absenteeism affecting the education that our young people are getting?
Well, negatively, obviously. And so I'll tell you, it's a big, 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 big focus for us. And I really thank you, Brian, for shedding light on this dilemma. And I mean, if we have time, I can let you know, I have student board members, and in November of 2023, I have a team, retired administrators, who are working with me on attendance and chronic absenteeism. And they interviewed my student board members and said, hey, what are some of the reasons You know, and it was really, really, they were candid. It was mind-boggling. They even talked about the start of time, high school, start time for high school. They talked about it. It's too early. It's difficult getting up. And they talked about the instruction being unstimulated, lack of transportation, lack of motivation.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. You're speaking my language there with, you mentioned the early start time. I'm from a pretty privileged background, I'll say. I was a pretty good high school student, and I still struggle to get there on time every morning.
Yeah, we didn't have the votes.
Didn't have the votes. Say more about that. What happened?
Yeah, so it was a 4-3 vote. So they did a lot of, the committee did a lot of research on switching, you know, getting the younger kids to come in at 7:30 because of all of the research. It was pretty impressive, but I think tradition and other factors, I think we were just not ready for it, but it was interesting. The kids brought it up in addition to a couple of other issues as well. So we know what the challenges are, and we're working towards those. And but it does negatively impact student achievement, student outcomes, student learning for sure.
Yeah, I'll say we interviewed a couple of authors on the show. It must have been 3, maybe 4 years ago at this point, about specifically wrote an entire book about start times, as I recall, in schools and how difficult it is for so many teenagers. So if any school board members out there are listening, please look up that segment or find that book and think about changing this. All right, let's transition into the sort of solutions aspect of our conversation, and we need to take a break in a couple of minutes. But before we do, Keisha Garrett, I want to ask you, what are you seeing teachers doing in the classroom? We'll start there to address this problem.
So it is a threefold problem. You need the teachers, the front office, and we have our homeless and attendance truancy officers. So the first line of defense is the classroom teacher, of course. Building this environment of respect and rapport, letting students know they're valued and they're wanted at school, making sure you attend to any kind of problem a student may have when they enter the classroom. But in terms of attendance daily, and our classroom teachers look at their daily attendance rates first thing in the morning, and they are making calls, especially at the elementary school level, and calling families and students to see how they're doing, are they coming later, and things like that. So that is the beginning of it, really having that relationship between home and school, being that teacher who lets families know they care, that the student is there every day and that it's important, building the environment where other students in the classroom value their teammates and their students being at school with them daily. That is so important. And we do see that quite more effectively at the younger age groups. At the older age groups, we are definitely working with teachers and staff to build the incentive programs. But again, looking at that culture and climate of the school to make sure that we provide, you know, high level engagement for students with high expectations, but building that environment of high support so that students know they're welcome and wanted at school and they're valued and that we're here for them. So that is all in the works, but our teachers are frontline in terms of helping with attendance support.
All right, we're going to take another break on the program. We'll continue our conversation from back in September on chronic absenteeism in Illinois schools. My guests for this were Keisha Garrett with East St. Louis School District 189, Felicia Stapleton, supervisor of the Project Impact Program run by the ROE, Regional Office of Education for Sangamon and Menard Counties, and Dr. Sharon DeMoulin-Carat, superintendent of the Peoria Public Schools. Again, we're on tape, but if you want to let us know what you think about this, email talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. More to come here on The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Our subject for the hour is education, specifically the problem of more students missing more school, even if there's a reason for them to be out. This is called chronic absenteeism, and it's gotten markedly worse since the pandemic. We're hearing about how it affects schools and how it affects the students, and more to the point, what some districts are doing about it. We first had this conversation back in September. My guests were Dr. Sharon DeMoulin-Carat, superintendent of the Peoria Public Schools, Felicia Stapleton, supervisor of the Project Impact program run by the Regional Office of Education in Sangamon and Menard counties, and Keisha Garrett with East St. Louis School District 189. Because we're on tape, no calls, but you can let us know what you thought. The email address is talk@21stshow.org. Let's go to the phones now, actually. Randy has been waiting on line two. Randy calling from rural Peoria County. Randy, thanks for calling in.
Was a teacher for a while, for most of my life, and got a job working for a job training program that employed at-risk youth. And as part of that, they had an educational component where they had to go to school. And, of course, these at-risk students were the last ones to go to school. And so one of the things I did is I suggested that we do something that got me universal criticism. You would have thought I suggested, that the United States become legally communist or something. It was terrible, the criticism I got. But it was fabulous the way this worked out because I stood my ground. I said, let's just pay these young folk for going to school. Let's pay them for going into the classroom. And lo and behold, they were there. Once, students that provided the transportation for another student, that domino would fall, and everybody was there every time. The teachers, I met with them, they said, you get that person here, we'll motivate them. And this ran for 3 years. The graduation rate went up in the school district that went along with me on this. And the fact of the matter is we pay people to do a lot of things. When you look at the social workers and everything else, take a fraction of that money, just pay these young people. Now,
Randy, that's fascinating. Can I ask, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but where did the money come from? I'm sure that's a question on a lot of people's minds.
Well, in this particular case, and there's a lot of these programs out there, there was a job training program. They're running some of these now. They'll go out to employers and say, look, we've got a consortium or a co-op program or something where they'll take especially at-risk students, the students that aren't going to school, and they'll find them jobs out in the community at employers to build job skills, employment skills. And in this particular case, there was a classroom component to these jobs. The young folks had to go back into the classroom. It was a kind of a progressive community, and they wanted these young folk to actually continue their education for one of the days a week.
So it's like a work-study program, basically, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And
right.
So they were worried about them attending. I said, let's just pay them, to go. Let's pay them the wage that they would earn on the job. And, that was, you're not going to pay students to go to school. That was wrong. Well,
that was the criticism.
Kept expanding the program. It was really, my thought is, pay these at-risk students. Pay them,
Randy,
to go to school.
Thank you so much for the call. Thanks for sharing your experience. I really appreciate that. Let's talk about that. Dr. Carat, what do you think about that? Paying students, finding some way to sort of hybridize their education with the work environment, perhaps.
Yeah, I love Randy and I love his thinking. Our vision at Peoria Public Schools is to reimagine the way we do things and do it differently around students' passion and interests. So we have a similar iteration, a different iteration. We're doing some similar things, actually, Randy. We have a pop program, an alternative, which is an alternative. They work half of the time, and then they study for a test, a high sets test. And so that's been very, very, very good for us. We usually capture about 30 students through that path, and that's at Peoria High, and they do a capstone project, and it's really fun. I visited that school a couple of times this year already. I got a little note card from them thanking me for coming, and Manual has a similar program. Richwoods, they have a similar program. And I even talked to one of our schools that's in a really high disinvested area, and similar to what Randy said, I said, hey, those children that are not coming and they're working, let's figure out a way to get them credit for that. They're getting good skills. Give them credit for that. So it is, again, thinking outside the box, and again, reimagining our work. But he's onto something, and I think most of the districts are doing some similar things. We were pilots 2017 with competency-based learning, similar to that idea, giving them credit again for those experiences, the work experiences. So a lot of that is infused in Peoria Public Schools. And as a result, we graduated, over 836 kids last year. Our graduation numbers continue to go up, because we have to give them credit for that work experience. And especially now that there's a workforce shortage, it's a win-win. Kids are getting experience, really relevant experience, work, employers, they're getting workers, and that match is beautiful.
All right, let's get one more caller in. Emily is calling from Champaign on line one. Emily, thank you for calling in.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I have a middle schooler here in Champaign, and he has had a really tough time getting to class on time. And we take him to school, and it seems like occasionally he dawdles in the hallway or he goes into the cafeteria later than he should in order to make it, and then to try to make it to class, it's a real hassle. And it seems like it's very, very chaotic in the hallways. It's really chaotic in the cafeteria area. And there are administrators, hall monitors, teachers in the halls trying to get these kids into class. They're all on a frontline basis trying to get this to work properly. And it seems so chaotic. And my son, he's from we're a slightly affluent family, and yet he's still struggling to make these things on time and participate. He just seems kind of lost. And a lot of the kids seem to be that way. I think if we could revisit again, going back to the subject of changing the school hours a bit, there was a small period of time when he was in elementary school where he happened to go to a school that started almost an hour later, and of course they let out an hour later. It was so much easier for him, and he was of a younger age. I get that, and middle schoolers, trying to cope with changes, going into adolescence, so it makes it even harder. So the earlier you make it, the rougher it is on these kids. And I also get that parents work, and by middle school, a lot of parents, both of them, are back to work, and they want to be able to drop the kid off before they have to be at work by 8 a.m. So it's a real balancing act. I do appreciate what CU is trying to do, but I wish they would revisit that issue of starting school somehow an hour later, and the kids get up an hour later. They're somewhat better rested, in mm-hmm. my view, and it's not such a crazy situation compared to when it starts an hour earlier.
All right, Emily, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. Maybe we'll have to do an entire show on this topic at some point in the near future. I appreciate that. We're coming to the end of our time together, so I do want to make sure we return to our guests on the program today. And Felicia Stapleton, I'll start with you from the Sangamon Menard Regional Office of Education. So talk to me about Project Impact. What are some of the tools in your toolbox, to use that cliche?
Okay, so we have student advocates that are placed within the school buildings, and currently we're located in 3 middle schools within the district and then 2 elementary, and hopefully we'll be moving into the high school. And we dig deep into attendance issues. We provide many, many services to our families and students. And the student advocates have like an identified caseload, but then they also provide services to other students within the school buildings that they're located in. It entails some of the things that were mentioned earlier, whether it's the phone calls, the emails, the letters, the home visits, doctor's appointments. I mean, we've picked parents up, students up. We've taken them to doctor's appointments. Just to eliminate them not, you know, being here at school. Any barrier that we can eliminate, we've provided utility assistance. We've helped them get to appointments to get those utility assistance, food boxes, you name it. And I think we have provided it within the program. We just dig deep and try to provide any service that is needed to eliminate our students not being in school. And sometimes that means going out of the norm. It absolutely does. As I always tell my staff, we put on our boots and get in the trenches because that's what we have to do in order to assist these families and students to be at school every day and on time.
Keisha Garrett in East St. Louis, you know, resources are limited in all areas of government, especially education, and especially in districts that serve more lower income populations. How do you triage? How do you figure out what's best within the district's limits?
So we definitely make sure that in our district that's 99% free and reduced lunch, that we work to apply for, you know, state grants, competitive grants, federal grants, and we look at those opportunities for how we can enrich the educational experiences for students. Our teams work together to blend and braid resources, both those that are district and those that are from the grants, to be able to meet the needs of our families and students. And so that is really one of the best magical ways that we do. We work together to make sure we're doing everything from those direct services to providing those enriching after school experiences to supporting the families and the students. And so we just definitely work together as a team. And just like has just been aforementioned, it takes boots on the ground. I was just thinking about how our social workers and our homeless in attendance officers work together on these home visits. So they make sure that we're meeting the individual needs of families and students. It just requires a lot of teamwork within the district and a lot of thinking, creative thinking, again, outside of the box to make sure that we're meeting the needs that we both know of and those that are new for us to address.
Dr. Karat, just about a minute left in our time together. If you had, you know, the power to write the laws, either at the level of your school board or the General Assembly or maybe even the Congress, what would you change? What would you do to help address this problem?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. I would just give schools, you know, options, give families options around where they are, you know, where they're learning. Learning doesn't have to be necessarily, and giving them credit for that, necessarily at a, you know, an edifice, a building, but, you know, so that I would probably go there. First, and I'll just say as we close, we're doing a lot and we're seeing really good improvements. Last year, our chronic absenteeism was 29%. And as of today, it is, 29 at this time, it's 24%. Our attendance was 91%. And this time it's 93%. So kudos to our school administrators. Every school has an attendance team. Before school starts, we go out and do the Because We Care campaign. You know, we just have to show a lot of love to our kids, our families, create a culture of attendance, build a lot of relationships. And we have lots of ideas regarding legislation. But, you know, I think also with kids who are they're like the mental health. I think one of them is like the mental health. I think they have 5 days. And if they take that, it's marked that's marked negatively. And so that is actually a very simple place to start. Right, Garrett? And so there's legislative kids can take 5 mental health days. But once they're absent, and I think Ms. Garrett or Felicia mentioned it, an absence is an absence, whether it's excused or unexcused, It's still marked negatively against you. So that's a simple place to start. If you take a mental health day, it shouldn't be marked negatively against you. So that's
That's another good topic for us to revisit on the show in the future. That is Dr. Sharon DeMoulin-Carat in Peoria, Felicia Stapleton in Sangamon and Menard counties, and Keisha Garrett in East St. Louis. Our conversation was first broadcast in September. That's all the time we have for today. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.